This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. That's right. We're rebranding here, Johnny and I.
Yes.
We thought we'd make it a little bit more because it's not This Week in Wrestling. We just felt it needed to be branded out a little different. Time to sow our oats, if you will. And Johnny pitched this idea, and I absolutely loved it, man. What made you think about it, Johnny?
You know what? Because I... A little bit of Titans ending, a little bit of this is what we're doing, and also a lot of, I'm like, okay, if this is where the focus is, I want to get as much ears on it as possible, and a punchy name is how you do it. You know, people remember a punchy name, and the fact is, like, you know, This Week in Wrestling, NWA On Demand is a mouthful.
It is.
You know, so it's a mouthful. And since you already have your other one, that's This Week in Wrestling, that gets a lot of attention because people who are really interested in the indies and current scene are really into your guys' show. They've already identified it with that, so I've got to differentiate it from that. And I remember I pitched it to you, and you're like, okay, sounds a good idea. And I think I'm like, okay, well, you're pitching this. You better come up with a good fucking idea. You know, and like, what could be, what could be? And then I remembered the music that... is used to intro the TV intro, and I'm like, from Space City, that's fucking it. And I immediately texted you back, how about Space City? And you're like, fucking perfect, bro.
Yep.
Ding, ding, ding.
And there we have it.
Yep.
So welcome to Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, and we have a lot of matches here to cover. I think we have Kendo Kimura versus Chavo Guerrero. We have Missy Hyatt versus Dark Journey in a lumberjack match. We have Nick Bockwinkel versus JYD. We have Terry Gordy versus Steve, Dr. Death Williams. Bruiser Brody versus Ken Patera. We have an six-man elimination match. And then the main event, a complete loss classic, and Harley Race defending the NWA title on July 1st, 1977 against Terry Funk in Houston. A lot of interesting matches, a lot of interesting things going on, but, you know, we got to start on a sour note, and that's with Chavo Guerrero passing away. It was timely that they uploaded a match right when he died. I mean, that's just terrible sounding, but...
I think he did it be in honor.
You think so? Okay.
That's right. What I assumed. Yeah.
Okay, because I thought I saw the upload first, and then I saw that Pat heard him passed away. So I don't know.
Let's just assume that because it's better.
Yeah, it is. But man, I don't know. I was listening to Meltzer, and he was talking about Chavo in the 70s, and he actually said he was as good of a babyface worker as Ricky Steamboat. I thought that was pretty interesting. But here on the footage, I mean, he's looked fantastic on the Houston footage, and it looked like a guy. You know what? I mean, a lot of people will say Eddie Guerrero is the greatest wrestler they've ever seen, and Eddie always said that Chavo was better. But if you look at the footage, man, they're pretty neck and neck. They're both pretty damn workers. I think Eddie's was a little better, but Chavo was no slouch. What type of memories do you have of Chavo?
Well, first of all, I read this quote when someone brought this up, and I remembered that I'd read it a long time ago. And apparently, Misawa once said that Chavo was the best wrestler he ever was in the ring with.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, whoa? You know, but it goes to show you. And the younger you see him, the more you see that.
Yeah.
You go, ah, okay. You know, I mean, he's a master. You know, and Eddie... And it's weird to say. It's like, well, who had more charisma? And I was like, well, you think, well, Eddie, well, we haven't seen enough. I mean, goddamn Mountain Goats just recorded a goddamn album in honor for him.
Yeah.
So he had must have had enough charisma to have that happen.
I think like Dave was saying, like Chavo actually had it earlier than Eddie. Well, it took Eddie a little while to get the promo work down. Like he always said, Chavo was a good promo.
Oh yeah,
right,
yeah,
from the start. But like for Eddie, it actually took a while for it to click.
Yeah, well, for Eddie, it actually, like when he first went to WWF, and he really, remember he started like really Cheech Marining it up, you know, like, yes, and all this shit. And at first, I was thinking, I was like, oh, it's a little over the top, you know, because I've in WCW, he didn't talk like that, you know, but then he calmed it down a little bit and found his real voice and rhythm doing that, and it was amazingly entertaining. So it took him a while, like you said, but apparently you're right, for Chavo, and for what little we've seen, it was like, yeah, he's had it right away.
Yeah, I'm probably in the minority. Like, I thought his best run was actually in 97 in WCW when he was turned to heel, because it changed his whole entire personality. But,
well, that was some fun stuff, you know, but then, not to go off on Eddie now.
But both guys could do both. Could work both, you know, good heel or babyface.
Well, and then Chavo had that fucking wacko run a few years back as Chavo Classic.
Yep.
That apparently, you know, and it got over. You know, it was getting over. People enjoyed it, and apparently it went a little to his head, and you know, and he made a few mistakes, and Vince was like, okay, no, you know. And I love that about him. You know.
Yep.
He's, you know, and he's just like, you know, boy, he's suddenly a star again on some level, and he just started acting like a wrestler.
Yeah, he showed up on Lucha Underground recently to back Chavo, came out of the crowd to back Chavo Jr. He just recently worked Japan as of, I think it was December or January, worked a Legends match for All Japan. And Dave, I mean, from what I saw, I mean, he wasn't old Chavo, but he definitely, for a guy 68 years old, he looked pretty damn nimble, you know, and he definitely couldn't tell he was, you know, 6 months away from dying type of stuff.
Cancer stinks.
Yeah, it really does, and that's just a crappy way to die. But I mean, I gotta give him, like, I got, you know, it's kind of, you got to respect that in a way where he didn't want people to feel sorry for him. So, I mean, this was like top secret stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I wish I remembered it exactly, but I can get the sentiment of it. What Chavo Jr. Put out there was, you know, it was like, you know, in honor of my dad, you know, but basically he said, a man who, you know, may not have always done it the right way, but he always did it his way.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's Chavo, man. Yeah, that's what his whole career is a lot about, man. He'd be in a territory for a week and realize they weren't going to use him to his best of his ability and disappear. I mean, he was in and out of a lot of different territories, and which I always thought was cool because Paul Bosch always respected him so much. And he was one of the few wrestlers, like, when what was Paul Bosch's retirement show, Vince said, yeah, you can bring any wrestler you want on there. And was one of them was Hacksaw Duggan, the other one was Chavo Guerrero, and the other one was Mil Máscaras. So,
cool.
On his retirement show. So that shows how much respect he had of Chavo. But hey, let's move on to the match. This is from Japan. And it's
As Paul Bosch is going to be telling us in great detail.
Yeah, tell us about the opening. I thought this was really neat.
It's really neat, but him improvising how he was getting to his points is some classic Paul Bosch. But he's like, wrestling, like football, which we call soccer. And I was like, oh, what? You know, is actually done all over the world, and it is done in Japan. And then apparently there's some convoluted story about Chavo is the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion. And, you know, if anyone thinks that he's not, you know, he provided the tape that he didn't even need to provide, but we're going to show it to you of him winning that. And keep an eye at the end where he's handed the belt and a certificate. I was like, a certificate certifying that he's the fucking junior heavyweight champion. And then he gets into like trying to explain to his audience. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, no, this was actually genius. He's trying to explain to his audience. Now, no offense, but a wrestling audience in the South at this time, you know, it'd be the same in the North, but they wouldn't do that. They just go, now footage from Japan. He's like, okay, this is going to be a lot different. It's going to be in another language even. It's going to be like, and he says this line to make people stay because he knows. He goes, you're going to be able to experience what it's like to watch television in Tokyo.
Yeah, I love that line.
And I was like, that's fucking amazing. Like, well, goddamn, Margaret, let's see how to watch wrestling in Tokyo. Okay, Clyde. And they have the match, and I thought it was okay. You know,
yeah,
it wasn't my cup of tea. Let me just put it that way. I mean, it was amazing until the very end, because when Kimura,
yep,
when he does that that flop over the top rope to the concrete,
yeah, that was nuts.
It was a splat, and I was like, popped, like, oh shit! And then Chavo hits the senton on him.
Yep.
On the outside, and then tosses him in and gets the 1-2-3, and I popped for the finish. I'm like, yeah, that was an awesome finish. But the way they got there, just not my cup of tea, but very good for, if you like that kind of wrestling.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's a... but he goes, he mentions Chavo, you know, he ever runs into trouble. Was there some sort of dispute of who the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship was? Because apparently Paul's trying to prove a point.
I have no idea.
Could be. You know, less crazier things have happened.
True. Now, I actually loved Bosch's intro here, because, I mean, you don't usually see promoters, you know, trying to explain. They like to show their talent working in front of big crowds like that, but they never really try to explain the differences. I thought that was pretty neat. Overall, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, I thought the match, like, I know this match made the 80s set from New Japan Pro Wrestling, the Death Valley Driver set. I know Phil and Childs were really were high on it, or like they voted yes on it. I know Will, he was the dissenter opinion on it. I was with Will on this one too, where I think, like, some of the stuff was good. Like, they were really crisp exchanges on the mat, and I like Kimura after a knee bar, and again after the left knee, and Chavo though gets the arm and down the leg into a standing surfboard. Kimura, the master of arm locks, is after the arm. Chavo looking for position. All the work is snug, and I'm loving Kimura with the knees and the European forearms. Jumping pile driver by Kimura, then he does it again. And everything was good, but it just, I felt like it lacked a focus in a way. It felt like more they were just exchanging holds as opposed to trying to win the match, and I felt that kind of hurt. But overall, I thought it was still solid stuff. 2 and 3/4 star match. Just nothing, nothing that blew me away or knocked my socks off or I. But I've heard a lot of people love this match, so...
I can totally see that. And I just want to mention one thing. Everyone, people from Texas, I apologize for my stereotypical... I used a Kentucky Southern accent for Texans, and I realized that was amazingly insulting.
I know it is. So, get the full pitchforks.
Yeah, and I know, and I do apologize. I should have picked... I need to work on my Texas hillbilly accent.
Damn straight.
You people don't like the people from Kentucky or Tennessee. I know. But so you were familiar with this already. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was on the 80s stuff.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I didn't get, obviously.
Yeah, because it's not your cup of tea. I got it. But the next match, we have Missy Hyatt versus Dark Journey, December 26th.
Now, this is my cup of tea.
1986 Lumberjack match. And you mentioned that this is probably the match that she talks about in with Austin about, right? On his podcast.
I'm imagining they ran this match lots of different places. She might have mentioned Lumberjack. Might have run that a lot of different places. But after just recently listening to Missy Hyatt on Austin's podcast talking about like one particular match with Dark Journey where she was just ripping her hair out for real and just beating the shit out of her for real, and she to where Missy was like, fuck you, I've had enough. And I thought it might be this because it's a lumberjack match. And at one point, the lumberjacks are just like, fuck, we're not going to throw her back in there. Fuck.
Yeah.
And she's like looking at them like, don't you fucking touch me. So, and how brutal the way she described it. Because that's what this was. Dark Journey just, I mean, I could see why she was, why Missy was mad. She wasn't working. She was just grabbing her by the hair and tearing her hair out and clawing her in the face and stiffly hitting her.
Yeah.
And shit, it was nuts.
Yeah, I tweeted Missy like, hey, your lumberjack match with Dark Journey got uploaded to NWA On Demand.
Oh no, really?
Yeah. She goes, a lot of potatoes. I'm like, I go, I wouldn't want to have my hair pulled like that.
A lot of potatoes.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah, I thought it was fine for what it was. It was entertaining. It had a lot of heat. You know, the crowd was totally into it, and then the lumberjacks tips worked. But yeah, it was these girls did not like each other, and you could definitely tell in the work, especially Journey was being a little bitch to her and stuff like that. Well,
and it even carried over into the way the lumberjacks were, because I mean, it really then seemed like the heels were the good guys here.
Yeah.
Because she goes out to their side, and part of the gimmick is the heels will not, they'll, you know, take care of the baby face, you know? So she, you know, goes out there, and they really start protecting her. Like, so the good guys don't all come on over, and no brawl happens. They're just like, they're surrounding her. Like, no, she needs a break. Do you see what's going on? And the heels, I mean, the baby faces, when they did get a hold of Missy in the middle of this mauling, they were lifting her up and putting their hands on her ass.
Yeah, Chavo in particular, you know.
They were groping the fuck out of her to where I'm just right. The heels, I have been right all this time. The heels are the noble people in this business.
Yep.
And this is the proof. I put this to you, Your Honor, that the bad guys aren't really bad. They're misunderstood. Deep down, they're the moral ones in this business. And that's proof right here. Because Jesus Christ, jokes aside, she fucking murders her.
Yeah. And then she's getting groped by the baby faces. You're and getting groped, correct. Too.
Yeah. Oh, dude. It was Sting, at one point, you could tell Sting at one point is like, nobody's getting near her. Sorry.
Yeah, he ends up picking her up and carrying her away and stuff. I mean, shit. Oh, Jesus. But hey, let's move to the next match, which is the elimination match of Bruiser Brody, Manny Fernandez, Bobby Duncombe, versus Ken Patera, Tully Blanchard, and Tank Patton from September 4th, 1981. It's an elimination match, and I thought it started out really hot at the beginning.
Well, let me ask you a question, though.
Yeah.
Isn't this, because we have the Brody-Patera match.
Right.
Isn't this what followed like immediately after, and they went straight into this?
Yeah, I probably should have started. Let's start with the first one, then. You know,
that's just what I assumed. I don't know if I was right.
You are right. So we'll start off with that one first. Okay. We'll start off with Bruiser Brody vs. Ken Patera, September 4th, 1981. And I thought there was a lot to like about this match. I thought both guys' strikes looked really good. I enjoyed the early portion of Brody working the back of Patera with the stomps and all that jazz. I enjoyed that. I thought the brawling around ringside was really good. Brody choking Patera with the mic cord looked nasty. I enjoyed the interference. The visual of bloody Brody in the full Nelson was incredible and full of drama. And the heat really got hot toward the finish. But I loved the first four or so minutes. I lost its way in the middle, but really got the crowd into it at the end. I gave it like 2 and 3/4 stars. A lot to like. Had a couple of hiccups, but I'd like to see a rematch between the two. What do you take away from the match?
I really liked it too, but I get you. I think there was a bit of a clash of styles going on with these two guys. And they eventually get it. I mean, in the beginning they get it, and in the middle it's like, eh, and then, but then the end's really hot, which is exactly what you just said. So yeah. I agree. So let me just talk. That referee is wearing a referee shirt with powder blue pants. Awful. How could he walk out like that? He looks ridiculous.
Well, it's Houston Oilers colors.
But it doesn't match the shirt at all. It was not good.
I'm pretty sure it's because it's the Houston Oilers colors.
What? No, powder blue?
Yeah. Love you blue. That was their thing about the Houston Oilers back in the day.
This is like the half of a bad polyester suit that we used to wear in the 70s, you know, with a referee top. Hated it. One note I loved was when Brody just lifts Patera towards the beginning, and I was like, oh, you don't see that often, Ken Patera. You know,
right.
Brody's a big, big man. And by the way, just any criticism of Bill going, well, you know, Brody, you know, there's been a couple of good matches here, and then this happens, like, well, Brody's back to stinking again. He's quite good here.
I had no problem with his performance. It was just in the middle. It just they just lost their way. I mean, do I still think Bruiser Brody's a great worker? No. But I think he's a lot better than people give him credit for.
Well, and again, to your point, working when he works for these guys,
yeah,
he puts on more effort. And this is it was just one of those. It almost felt like heel versus heel, except when people were going apeshit for one of the heels.
Yeah.
But as far as working style goes. And you're going to lose your way in the middle. Maybe not nowadays, because nowadays it doesn't matter. But back then, it sure did.
Yeah.
You know, because you're like, who's going to get the shine right now? Well, neither of us know how to do that, because we're both fucking bad guys.
Yeah, I can see that. And then the next match was the continuation. It was an elimination match. And I loved it, because it was a continuation of the Brody-Patera match. Mm-hmm. And I thought it started out really hot. And I actually loved the Brody Patera double elimination. I thought that was fantastic. Then it morphs into like your typical tag structure, and the heels get heat on the faces. I just didn't think the work was all that compelling, and it was like, ugh. And I had Manny Fernandez, who's the best worker in the match, spends most of the time on the outside. But once he gets the hot tag, it gets interesting again. Still, for the most part, this was good. But I thought, on paper, I thought it could be something really awesome. And I gave it like 2.5 stars. Just, it kind of was just there. What about you?
I really like this. But right now, in honor of the newest announced inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, all this needed was Teddy Long to have come out in the middle going, not so fast, player. We have a 6-man tag team match. Holla, holla. Because, that's what they did. And then you see it's Bruiser Brody, Manny Fernandez, and Bobby Duncan. I'm like, that's on paper, that's a badass team. Fucking team. that's a fucking mega team of fucking badasses. And then you got on the other side Tully Blanchard, Ken Patera, and Tank Patton. You're like, one of these things is not
others. Yep.
I'm sure Tank meant something down there, but looking here is like, there's a weak link somewhere, and I just can't put my finger on it. And he's not bad.
Yeah.
Paul rules throughout this match. He's selling it like the mayhem it is. There's an awkward moment because we know he uses the word touch instead of tag, and he goes, "Tank touched Tully." I was like, show me where on the doll.
Oh God.
and at the end, when Brody's going apeshit, because they're still remembering the end of the previous match, and he's bloodied and shit, and he's now just going complete Brody apeshit. And they're cheering like mad.
Yeah.
Place is going amazing. The electricity's off the fucking charts. You know, and so that affects my viewing, and that kind of hot crowd like that. I was like, when I hear that, I get so into it with this kind of footage.
Oh, yeah.
So I really enjoyed this. I liked it better than the singles that preceded it.
All right. Fair enough. All right, man. Why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. And we are back with Nick Bockwinkel versus Junkyard Dog from May 14th, 1982. And I was really impressed with this. These are the type of matches you're trying to... We're trying to find Bockwinkel when you're trying to look at him as a whole as a world champion. And we've seen him work like against super workers like Rick Martel. But it's always interesting to see a guy who you're working somebody who's incredibly over in JYD, but he has his limitations. And you're kind of seeing, and you get to see what Bockwinkel does with somebody with limitations, but has a certain skill set. And he builds the match around that skill set. And I thought this was masterfully done to have a main event style match here. I thought the crowd was incredibly hot for JYD. Heenan diving over the top rope to get away from the dog early in the match was just fantastic. And Bach is stalling early and, you know, trying to get some heat. Bach roughing him up early. I like Bach cheating while blocking the ref. I always like that, where he's cheating, but he's able to, you know, turn his body a certain way so the ref can't see it. I've always liked that for heels. JYD teases his strength. JYD taking it to Bach, and a giant thump later, the dog gets the first fall. So this is key because JYD has now hurt Bockwinkel's back, and which sets up the dog's narrative for the rest of the match. And that's the second fall starts with JYD focusing on the back. And the best part is Bosch is getting the story over. And I'm loving when I'm a mark when it comes to the triangle where you have action, commentary, storyline. And this had the triangle to perfection. And you had Bosch explaining the story and made it that much easier for us to follow. So I love that. I love the Kozak Heenan interaction in the second fall. Absolutely loved it. And then Bach evens it up with a pile driver. And the third fall, it's for all the marbles. And Bach is all over JYD. JYG reverses the pile driver. JYD back to the back with a Russian leg sweep. A nasty double head knocker. JYD does this running punch that looks so nasty. Then Dog hooks onto the abdominal stretch. Again, everything is about focusing on the back. JYD goes back to the big thump. And Heenan takes this incredible bump off of JYD headbutt. The match gets thrown out. 3.25 stars. I thought the match was really smartly worked. And Bach waited out so smartly. It highlighted all of JYD's strengths. Worked Heenan into the mix. Spot on. And I liked the story of JYD working the back. This was just really good stuff. Textbook, how to lay out a match and have good spots and have big pay and the payoffs all pay off. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, baby. All right. It's out of control. I can't do it. I'm dancing. Oh, sorry. My dumb idea. We can edit that out. What I was about to say comes out to another one bites the dust. God, pause. Epic failure.
Yeah.
Man, sorry. I was like, yeah, because you got to coughing and I got to worrying about you. Okay. 1, 2, 3. When this opens, it starts with another one bites the dust, and I immediately mark out because it's one of the best entrances in wrestling ever. Dog coming out to that. It was like one of the things I hated. And I didn't even know Junkyard Dog. I read about him in the magazines, and they used to say he came out to that. And I think he might have come out to that in WWF at first, now that I think of it.
Yeah, he did.
Grab them cakes. And yeah. I was just like, oh, that's the worst thing ever. You know, but when he came out to that, but they talk about how in Mid-South, though, it was different because, you know, the dog was less cartoony and he was more jacked. And then when you get to see that, you're like, God damn. Yeah, you can see why he was such a fucking star.
Yep.
Yeah, I love this. Not much to add to the match. You pretty much nailed it. But let's mention Paul Bosch and what he thinks about people who throw things into the ring.
Oh, yeah.
He says, and I quote, only idiots and mental midgets.
Yep.
And there's some in every crowd throw things into the ring. It's dangerous. Even a paper cup can result in someone being hurt. And I'm like, he just lays in. Because we'll see throughout this footage. When the fans start throwing shit or acting up, they don't tolerate it, apparently. I mean, they really don't seem to tolerate it. You know, because that guy gets on that microphone and he's not nice about anything. You know, he's like, sit the fuck down and stop throwing shit. And Kozak and Heenan, Kozak hits Heenan. I loved it. And just the last thing, that headbutt bump Heenan takes.
Oh, insane.
Words can't describe it. It literally looks like someone shot him.
Yeah, it was a 5-star bump, easy.
But shot him like in a movie because he gets hit in the head and Heenan spins around and flips himself over the top rope so fast.
Yeah.
And boom! It's insane. It's one of the best bumps I've ever seen in wrestling. I mean, I'm not exaggerating.
You're not. It was an incredible bump. You're like, holy shit.
And just boom, and there's no stagger, there's immediate reaction, and he flies out of it. All the while, you can see his facial expression for a split second, and it's unconscious. It's a master bump.
Yeah, Bockwinkel and Heenan are like, I think they're my favorite pairing of all time. I just love that pairing. I mean,
the more and more I see, the more and more I can lean to that.
Yeah, I love it, absolutely love it. Next up is one of my favorite Mid-South feuds: is Terry Gordy versus Steve Williams. This one is from December 26, 1986. And this starts off just how, and the winner gets a shot at the one-man gang. This starts out like a filled feud, right off the bat with some major bomb throwing to start. They take it to the floor, and all I can say is this is one hell of a brawl. Doc is stomping on Gordy's hand was a nice touch, and that's cool for two reasons. One, it could possibly take out the Oriental Spike out of play. Plus, it's a nice touch because One Man Gang, you got to remember, broke Gordy's arm. And that's how he ended up with the title. So there's that storyline they're playing into. And these guys are just putting a beat down on one another. And this is just real physical stuff. Gordy's working the back, and I like the psychology of Gordy working over Doc's back with Smart, and actually added a lot to the brawl, just didn't make it aimless. Gordy, and it makes sense, because Gordy working over the back takes out Doc's Oklahoma Stampede. I can't put over the physicality of this match, though, enough. And then Gordy again with this bear hug, and I will admit, he ended up going to the bear hug a couple times too many, or just a little too long. He could have, done a bear hug once, twice, then maybe thrown some forearms at the back, or dropped a knee on the back. He could have made the work a little bit more engaging, I will say, on the back work, but I think he went for the bear hug like four times, and that got a little long in the tooth, I will say.
Well, let me, if you don't mind, let me interject, I don't recall. Did the crowd seem to mind?
No, they didn't. I mean,
well, then there you go.
Right. I agreed. But these guys have a great history with one another. As two big guys throwing hands is always a good thing. And I like Gordy puts Doc into the guardrail, and then Gordy's out to the back some more. And the backwards is just a good piece of storytelling. And I love how Gordy cuts off Williams by tossing him into the post. But what made it really click after all the back work was Doc's payback spots of putting Gordy into the guardrail a few times. And that's what helped. And this was just a great brawl with really deep psychology. And it's just the epitome of Mid-South wrestling. 4 1/4-star match. The match just ends up with a double count out, or it gets thrown out. They're just brawling all over the floor, double juice, throwing each other's head into the ring post. Just hate-filled, and it leads to more stuff. What were your thoughts here?
Well, this starts with, of course, the same announcer that I mentioned. And he's yelling, "Do not throw anything into the ring. You will be arrested." And he's like, "Please stop blocking the aisles. Go to your seats." He pauses and then he says, "Sit down."
Yep.
I died. I'm like, that's hilarious. And by the way, you said this is the essence of Mid-South. No, no, sir. Because as we saw by the t-shirts that every crew member was wearing, this was UWF.
My bad. Yeah, yep.
This was my height of watching this. This is when me and Wolfman watched this every Saturday night on that wacky UHF station. Yep. And we did not miss an episode. You know, we would find ways to hang out, you know, sleep over again, you know. So not, we would call each other, like teenage girls, if we weren't watching it together, we'd call each other, "You watching this shit?" Because, you know, we were loving it. And this is what we were loving. Like, it's one man gang, and it's Dr. Destiny Williams and Terry Gordy, and we're just saying they're just beating the fuck out of each other. And these big giants beating the fuck out of each other. We're like, this is amazing, and the rest of the show was amazing too. But in this match, in the very beginning, Doc is stomping on Gordy's punching hand, and it just looked brutal. And everything you said. Exactly. In fact, I thought you were in this. Were you in this crowd?
No, I was not.
Oh, I thought this was maybe from the same card.
No, this was 2 weeks later.
Oh, okay. But it got me thinking. I'm like, Pete's going to describe this perfectly, so I'm going to think a little outside the box here. This is Bill Watts at his height of booking, I thought. And I'm like, these are big giants. It was all about big giants just pounding on each other. I'm like, well, you know what? I know that's why he likes that. And it's not a Southern thing. It's a New York thing.
It is, yeah.
That's what this is. This is Southern New York, basically, as he would want it, of the 60s. Not 70s, the 60s, because he was Bruno's protege, and he had a turn. He turned on Bruno. They did that then, with Bill Watts, when all these guys were young, And they would just, you know, they'd be just clubbering. I mean, the footage doesn't exist, sadly. But you think about it, you know, like, oh, young guys like this, you know, they were just clubbing the shit out of each other because that was the work style in New York.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's why he's like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get the biggest, baddest guys and just have them beat the shit out of each other. And there's going to be a lot of bear hugs and there's going to be a lot of clubbing and because that's what he likes. And that occurred to me watching this. I was like, oh. And then I'm like, no wonder I loved this.
The
presentation was completely different, but it was a similar, like, these are big dudes just beating each other up.
Athletic big dudes.
They're amazingly athletic, big guys, but, you know, with far better personalities, generally. The one-man gang, that's amazing.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, man, we're going to take a final break, and we'll be right back with the main event of Harley Race, Terry Funk, July 1st, 1977.
The PWO-PTBN feed has changed its name, now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, folks. And I gotta say, the one match we're gonna talk about right now, Harley Race versus Terry Funk, July 1st, 1977. This is the only full match of these guys wrestling each other in existence in the singles match for the NWA title.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's highlights of one from the title change where we kept the third fall. But no, there's no ever singles match between these guys on tape of the whole entire match. It's the epitome of a holy grail. I mean,
yeah.
I think this is like...
Are you sure some fucking asshole isn't going to go, well, there's that one spot where the tape goes off for like a second and comes back and you missed a few seconds of stuff.
Yeah, then he'd go fuck himself.
Right? That's what I wanted to hear.
Of all the matches on the service, I mean, this thing, I mean, Harley Andre is up there, but I think this might be my biggest holy grail of the whole entire service. What about you?
Not mine, but I can see why it is. And that's not going to put that. This is fucking awesome.
What was your biggest holy grail one that so far?
I don't know. I don't know. On the service. I don't know. It's you know. I'm not a match guy.
Okay.
I'm a vibe guy. My biggest thing is like. The realization of what Houston wrestling is, and Paul Bosch, that's my thing, and like, and you filling me in on all the back history and knowing why he promotes a certain way and watching the way he does it, that's my favorite part of this. So, you know, I'm not a big match guy, I'm the promotion, you know, guy, and but I could see this. If I was to pick one, it'd be in there. It'd be in the top three, probably, based on the third fall, which I've never got around to watching before. So, all new to me.
Okay.
So, when it starts at second fall and then the rest of the match, is when I looked at the time, I'm not a huge, I'm like, oh, shit, it's fucking 40-something minutes. I'm like, one match? Okay, you know, that's me. And at one point, I was like, oh, this has been going at a nice clip. And it was during the first fall, mind you. And I'm like, well, let me check. There's probably only 5 minutes gone with this, right? And I looked, and it was halfway over. I was like,
yeah.
Yeah, they got me.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, I absolutely love this match. I thought it was it's one of my favorite wrestling matches I've ever seen. And I tweeted to Terry Funk and Harley Race about it. I got a Harley Race liked my tweet when I said it was one of my greatest wrestling matches I've ever seen.
You know what? That's going to give him the will to get out of that wheelchair.
Could be. I doubt it. But after watching this match, I mean, I no wonder, I mean, how beat down those guys' bodies are. This is a total Holy Grail match. I mean, it's, I mean, I honestly, Funk versus Race. The only other ones I could possibly think of is like giving us another, I mean, we have Briscoe versus Dory Funk. I'd love to see a full Jack Briscoe versus Terry Funk. I would love to see a Jack Briscoe versus Harley Race. But this is one of them. One of the...
And Pete, and to that point, I wanted to get there. I'm glad you did first. From that perspective of, you know, all we've read, you know, guys like you and me, our age and stuff, and all we've read is these, the classic NWA battles between, and we mentioned that class earlier, but it's Harley Race and Terry Funk and Dusty Rhodes and Jack Briscoe. And all that, and we just don't have a lot of it. It's like lore. So when it this does happen like this, and you see that, you go, "Oh, that's what they were talking about."
Yeah, I will say after this match, and there's the world of the famous Terry Funk versus Jumbo Tsuruta match, and from Japan when Terry defended the NWA title, and then there was the. Match against Mark Lewin. Those are three long NWA style title matches. I would say Terry Funk is the greatest wrestler ever. Just on those three. I mean, I need to see more. But I have this. I gave this match 5 stars. I'm giving the Jumbo him versus Jumbo 5 stars, and I gave him versus Mark Lewin at 4 3/4 stars. Terry Funk was a master, and this thing is a masterpiece. It's again, like I said, a total Holy Grail match. It makes this makes why I love the service so much. I mean, it's just incredible. We get this chess match right off the bat. Total feeling out process. We get a little mind games. This is all in the first few minutes. Finally, a big chop by Terry Funk, and he strikes first. Now Terry's on the arm, and Funk is just wringing this arm out. Funk transitions into an arm stretch, and Funk is just rubbing into the arm, just nasty stuff. Funk just standing, I love he's has the arm, and he's standing on Harley Race's freaking head.
He stands right on his fucking mush.
Right on the bush, right on it. And then he has a hammerlock with his feet. And this is how you work and hurt people. This is all engaging, it's nasty, it looks like it hurts like a motherfucker. And everything is gritty. And some of the holes even look unnatural. Like, how the hell is his arm doesn't fall off? I mean, excuse me.
Oh, by the way, our loyal listeners, Pete here.
I'm fighting through a sickness.
Is not feeling well, and he wanted to talk about this so much that he's fighting through the plague. So appreciate that while I'm covering so he can get a glass of water.
Yeah, there we go.
You good? Okay.
Yep. Thank you. We are pro, Johnny. And then stepping on Harley's head is just plain nasty. We get this little slight clip that, you know, people might bitch about it, but it's about 2 minutes. And we're back in, and Harley's working a headlock. And I'm like, well, after his arm getting worked over, why are you working a headlock? But you know what? Paul Bosch comes to the rescue and says this is a perfect opportunity for the headlock's a perfect hold to get the arm flowing, get the blood flowing back into Harley's arm. I'm like, okay, I can buy that, all right? So because Paul Bosch saves it, I'm not holding against it. To me, a good commentator can save a bad spot in wrestling. And right,
okay,
here,
I'm sorry I'm going to interrupt here, but here's the thing. Think about that logically. Your arm is numb. As Paul puts it always, it's a Charlie horse, and it's numb. And if you're putting that into a headlock, you're pumping. So blood is going to flow through that arm because you're pumping down on something. It makes perfect sense.
It does. He totally Johnny logicked it, and it worked. You know, it's not ironic.
I'm no
Johnny
doctor,
logic.
But...
yeah. But I bought it. You know what? Good commentary. And the struggle on this headlock is tremendous. And again, I can't put over Paul Bosch. It's really tremendous calling like that spot and explaining the psychology of what both guys are doing and explain the ring positioning. I mean, Paul Bosch is a master at this match right now. And explaining like why the headlock is smart after working the arm worked over. Just great stuff. And then we get this great overhand wrist lock battle and Race working the neck with the head scissors. So now this is really smart and gives the arm a breather to recuperate a little bit from all the arm work. We get this rope break, but Race strikes first. Both guys are throwing bombs, and Race is on the arm. Terry is now selling the shoulder injury. Funk with the big chops, trying to get separation from Race, and the crowd is just like electric here on this exchange. Funk with a great move to get the spinning toehold, but Race has done his homework and has an answer. A great near fall on a roll-up of a Race figure four attempt. Funk with this huge bump to the floor, and Race with a covering blow. Inside-out suplex by Race. A domino stretch by Race. Crowd is expecting a submission. Yes! First fall goes to Harley. The key here was Funk took a bump and sold the back injury. And it played into the finish. I love the psychology here. Second fall. And Funk attempts to... And he's doing these nasty ear gouging of fucking Race. Where Funk is trying to cauliflower Harley Race's ear. Nasty. Funk gets into Race's head. Race is dropping elbows and knees on the back. You know, following through with the psychology of the second of the first fall. Race with a chin lock and a knee in the back. Just nasty. Funk with a backslide gets two. And then Funk hits a pile driver for the equalizer. And it's all tied up. Third fall. And it's for all, for everything. For the NWA title. Who is going to be the kingpin? Well, you know what? It starts with Race with a huge chop to start. Both guys throwing big hands. Spinning neck breaker by Funk. A big atomic drop by Funk. Crowd popped huge for the near fall here. Spinning toehold by Funk. Harley was straight rights. Funk's eye is busted open bad. And Race is going after that cut. Race's fist is covered in blood from working over that cut. Knee drop by Race into the bloody Funk. A Harley headbutt into the cut. Race selling the leg huge. Funk is after that leg. Spinning toehold. The crowd is blowing its load here. Mm. Race back to the eye. The ref calls it, and Harley Race steals the champ. Ref waves it off for a blood loss. The PA is calling for a doctor. This is an epic match. 5 stars. And then we get this great Terry Funk promo afterwards. And his eye looks absolutely terrible. One of the best matches I've ever seen. This is a holy grail. An incredible Terry Funk match. Harley Race was with him 100%. I need more 1970s Terry Funk in singles matches. I'm watching him step on fucking Harley Race's bush while he's working an arm. Is the greatest thing I've ever seen in wrestling, and warms my stomach. It just makes me want to do that to people for a living. I mean, holy shit, this is wrestling, and this match didn't even feel like it was 40 minutes. And no. I legit, after I watched this live, I mean, after I watched it, I was on an adrenaline rush for an hour. After this, and I'm so angry there's hardly any reviews about it anywhere, because it was such an incredible match. I can't put it over enough. I mean, this might be one of my, I think it might be my favorite NWA title match ever. I mean, it's up there. It's up there with the Steamboat Flair Clash of Champion as one of my all-time favorites. I mean, this is an absolute classic. It's up there with Funk vs. Jumbo. I mean, classic, man. I know it might not be your cup of tea.
Number one, When you got done watching the match, when did you put your pants back on?
They said everything. This is a Pete Schumacher masterpiece.
But here's the thing. I'm completely agreeing with you. No part of this, when I say not my cup of tea, I'm going to explain that. Because, A, you just really opened my mind to some things, going, oh, yeah, and was thinking about my state of mind while I sat down first to watch this. So, yeah, you've been very convincing, counselor.
If the glove don't fit, you got to acquit.
And that was a masterpiece of a review while you're fighting through it, sir. That's fighting spirit, dum dums. Okay? right there. Okay. Because you have an amazing point. And I was there with it. I'm like, we haven't seen enough. And I'm like, is it a holy grail? I'm like, thinking about it this way, and after everything you said, I'm like, fuck yeah, it is. You know? And I'm like, yeah, of course it is. You know, even after that convincing argument. But then you think about it, and you go, yeah. And to my point, this is the shit that was considered legendary we've never seen. Now you see it, and it's this amazing that is the very definition of a holy grail. It's just that here's the thing. People didn't know. This is a discovery rather than something people I've this particular match. So imagine, like I said, these guys worked each other, not just these two guys, but that whole group. They just worked each other all the time. You know, and just imagine how good that era of wrestling was all around the independents down there. I mean, New York was clipping along doing their thing, and all the NWA, and they were the NWA too, you know that relationship, but the NWA champs are doing all this, and it's these guys, it's the most elite group of wrestlers in the world ever put together, and you see it here. This is evidence of that, so yes, you are absolutely right. And so, just looking at my notes, the stepping on the face, Terry Funk doing what, a fucking Tony Atlas fucking press slams twice.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
What the fuck is this? You know, let's not undersell Harley goddamn Race here too. He's awesome. He's fucking awesome. You know, it takes two to tango. And Harley was fucking amazing. The great part where they're in the ropes and Harley goes to punch Terry. And Terry ducks, but instead of going side to side, he ducks down, pops up, kind of just looks at Funk for like a split second, like, you missed, stupid, and then pops him in the nose. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing timing and such a great choice in how you do this art. And I'm going to say artist because Terry Funk, to your point, we see more of him like this. Yeah, greatest. Because you know a lot of that crazy old man flailing Terry that we grew up with? You see a little of it here. There's a little of it here, but he's a big hoss, a big athlete, but he does a little of that here. So it's been consistent throughout his career. That he has that, and it lends a different feel to moves that normally would sometimes be like, okay, that's typical. Not a Terry Funk whatever. Oh, a Terry Funk armbar looks a little different than everyone. Yeah, everything he does is just a little different. It's amazing. He's an artist. And speaking of art, I've done a little stuff like, at one point, because he's fighting, you know, to get that the toehold in. And I kept saying to myself, like, the one thing about that toehold is you leave your face open. You know, we'll get to that later.
Yep.
He explains that. And why he still does it. Or at least Bosch does. In that third fall, he, at one point, he's bloody as fuck. Bloody as fuck. As bloody as I've ever seen someone in wrestling. You know, It was dark.
I mean Harley's fist looked like he did surgery. I did open heart surgery.
Yeah, dude, Harley's fist looked like a glove from MASH.
Yeah,
operating room just red. And at one point, when
or for more modern people, ER.
Yeah, well, put it to you, which was bloodier? But you know, it was bloodier in both of them. This, because it was real fucking blood.
Yep.
And at one point, he's dripping blood all over Harley Race, and Paul Bosch points it out. He's like, this is when I'm loving this. And Bosch is like, the blood is everywhere. The blood is all over. It's dripping on the body of Harley Race. And I was like, not enough can be said about Paul Bosch during this match, by the way. This was big fight feel. And he, any little silly Boschisms or, hey, it's someone's birthday or this and that. Nope, not in this. He was calling an epic, and he lived up to it. This is the best voice for this. And when Nick first wants to stop the match, and Terry's grabbing him, going, no, Nick, no, and he doesn't. And it was the second time, which is important. But during that epic thing, because he wants to get back to that knee of Harley, he grabs Harley's knee pad and just twists it. So that's what's he's gonna do to pull him back down into that move, because that's his move. Because that's the move. That's his daddy's move. That's his brother's move. That's the Funk move, and that's why we do that move. And it might leave us open, you know, to get our faces punched. But that's how we win matches, because we're the fucking Funks. God damn it. And then, of course, as you mentioned, we need a doctor. We need a doctor at ringside. It just made it feel like it felt so real. You saw the button. And you know what? It was real. They fucking did need a doctor at ringside, because Terry Funk was bleeding dark blood out of that side, over that eye. It was insane. This was amazing. It was amazing. I'm not even going to go into my whole, like, well, I don't normally like 2 out of 3. Fuck that. You convinced me. This probably is the best match we've seen on this service.
Yeah, I think it is, and I mean, it makes me feel like I should pay more for this service after watching this match. Honestly, yes, it's
Bruce. You've got a mark.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm not, mind you, but this I mean, we've had so many really awesome finds, you know. We've discovered the Jose Lothario Gino Hernandez feud. We've the Gino Hernandez versus the Guerrero feuds. We've gotten matches for the JYD Butch Reed feud that would never really existed anywhere, except for here. And now a classic NWA title match that goes 40 plus minutes, and it was just an incredible match and one of my all-time favorite matches.
And I mentioned this to you, and I did that too, because I was sitting down like, oh, this is going to be long, huh? Okay. And at one point, I'm like, I'm into it. I'm like, let me check and see how much longer there is. Probably only 5 minutes have gone by. And I look, I'm like, oh, this is halfway over already. You know, and I'm like, oh, that's amazing. That's such a sign that you're like, no, you are amazingly engaged.
Oh, yep. All the work was engaging. Everything, you're following along, and you're just into it, and it builds and builds and builds and builds. And excuse me, but it's just so layered, this match. I mean, oh god.
And before we wrap up the promo, because then after that, then you get a Terry Funk interview. But you know, he's sitting in like in a chair, talking at the camera. And he's got in his eye, stitches all over the top of his eye. And he's explaining to you that, because I'm not mad at the referee, you know, but you see, I'm not a normal person. Now, by the end of this, and he never loses his cool, I don't know about you, Pete, but I had serious doubts that Terry Funk actually did forgive Nick Kozak. And doesn't blame the referee, because he brings it up an awful lot.
Yep.
Because he mentions, like, it's almost like he's saying, I appreciate what you did, but I'm not a normal person. And then he talks a little bit more, and then he goes back to it. Anyways, he's getting a little bit more excited, and he brings it up again and again. Then he gets to, I'm a tough enough man to come back from anything. But I don't blame you, Nick. I'm thinking you do, and I can't wait for you to get your hands on him. And, yep. But he also gets this one. You have to understand what's most important to me is to be considered the best at my profession. And the only way to do that is to hold the NWA World Heavyweight title. You know, and I'm trying to master Young Funk. Everyone can do Old Terry. It's going to take a while because Young Funk is amazing.
And it's different.
Amazing. There's a little bit there, but of the Terry we grew up with. But this is a young fucking stallion of a fucking man right here. And he's amazing. And then he explains. He's like, I get it. But what I want to know is, and he accuses Harley Race of having a foreign object. And that's how he busted him open. You know? So, I mean, there's almost a little bit, like, if you play this in any, in like, St. Louis, let's say, where Harley is the babyface, you can play this, and Terry Funk's the heel, but it's all subtle, because they're the top of the game. Like, he must have hit me with a foreign object, you know? Which is always an excuse. You know, and he's a little mad at that referee, because I'm better, he basically says, because I'm better than normal people. If you are a Terry fan, this all makes perfect sense. And you're like, yep, that's Terry Funk. That's my hero. If you're not a Terry Funk fan, you're like, well, fuck you. It's so subtle. He's the master. He goes to Eddie Graham, the president of the NWA, and he's got a return match. Doesn't say where it's going to be. Oh, no. And then he said that Paul Bosch went to bat for him, and he went to the NWA president, Eddie Graham. He's got a return match where there's where it can't be stopped, and he knows how dangerous that can be. But, you know, here's what he has to do. So a fuck up like Nick Kozak can't fuck up again.
Yeah.
Basically, but he plays off like a champion. And he just looks like a champion. You know, this is not cowboy crazy Terry Funk or old man crazy Terry Funk or even like Lawler my eye Terry Funk.
Yeah, no.
This is. I am Terry Funk, and I am the best wrestler in the world.
Yep.
And it's amazing. It's amazing.
It really is. Wow. Just wow. That's all I'm going to say. I want to say these uploads this last week were just incredible. And like I didn't think there was no way anything was going to top the Gordy and Doc match.
Well.
And then fucking Harley Race and Terry Funk fucking made me a liar. And I just want to say thank you guys, NWA On Demand, for bringing that bad boy into existence and that.
Well, didn't you say that? I mean, forgive me if you've already mentioned this before on the show, but didn't you say that as soon as basically, it seems like as soon as Bruce went, what we have it? Is it ready? Go! Yep. And it was like the middle of the night.
Yep, he mentioned it. I think at like around 11:30 on Pro Wrestling Only. We got all three falls now of the Harley Race Terry Funk match. And we got these other two matches, too, which we got later in the week.
Right.
But then an hour later, I'm just mucking around before I go to bed, and it's up at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm watching this fucking now. And I think that's so cool, Bruce. He's like just as excited as us when those gems come out.
Yeah, that – well, it's that because he is that excited about it. But here's the thing. He's seen it. For anyone who would criticize the service, think about this. The guy running it knows that this is a limited audience that he's got right now, but it's a committed audience.
Yeah.
And this is something that they would want. And he, as soon as it was able to be put up, goes, boom, it's like breaking news at 11 o'clock at night, knowing full well, A, probably a lot of us are still up, you were, and B, that shows a level of commitment to your customer base.
Yep.
That you don't really see, you know, in a lot of the reasons. Just think about that for a second. He's like, I know that the people who subscribe to this would want to see this immediately. So here you go. You know, there's no pussyfooting around about it. You know, that's a commitment to your customer base. And I'm not blowing them just because, you know, for any reason other than reason that's true. And I love the service, but that's true. Nobody else does that. Come on.
Exactly, you know. I saw it, showed up at 1:04 a.m. By 1:06, I'm using the Tubio app and watching it on my Roku. There you go. Man, thanks again for listening to Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. Remember, you know what? If you haven't seen this match, sign up for NWAOnDemand.com, $8.99. You get the first week free. Watch the match. If this won't get you in, I don't know what ever will. This thing is incredible. Also, Tubio app. Download it and launch it from your iPhone or your Android. You can watch it on your Roku. Johnny, do you have anything you got to plug, my friend?
I'm just saying, hey, this one was a lot of fun, and this one was for Chavo.
For Chavo, yeah. Rest in peace, my friend. Rest in peace. Have a good week, guys.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden. King of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor. I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish. I can understand some. And I need justice in my life. Here it comes. Look high is my last hope. Chavo Guerrero, coming off the top rope. Red shoes Dugan, holding his arm high, all out of breath. I hated all of Chavo's enemies. I would pray nightly for their death. Sending like fire on the people who deserved it most. Almost completely unknown outside of Texas and on the West Coast.